Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the flu vaccine shortage right after this message. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor, and we're taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if a plumber said to you, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? What if a carpenter said that? He who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client. Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or steps is incompetent? Well, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who can't represent himself in court has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or carpenter. Listen to James Nielsen. Now, Nielsen's a professor at the Hastings Law School, a law school professor. Here's what he had to say about these budding lawyers coming out of law school. He said, quote, "It's a fact that a student can graduate from this, the fourth largest law school in the United States, without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed." He said it's worse than that. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed. And a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom, without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a client in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and for their clients, it is a cruel hoax. That's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, just go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct, 417-273-4967. Well, people are starting to blame the government, for crying out loud. It's George Bush's fault that we have a flu vaccine shortage here in the year 2004. Yeah, that's right. It's George Bush's fault. It's the Republicans. They're keeping the vaccine from us. I don't believe that for a minute, and I'm a free market believer. I think that the free market has more to do with shortages or surpluses than does the government, and every time the government gets involved in something, they screw it up. Just name one thing the government ever got involved in that they didn't screw up. So if the government stays out of the medical business, I think we'd all be better off. But leaving that question aside, we were talking about this thing of the flu vaccine. Is it even good for you? I guess we ought to look at that, shouldn't we? We've been talking about the flu vaccine and vaccines and vaccinations. Remember W.B. Clark, that's Dr. W.B. Clark's important observation, that cancer was not found in unvaccinated individuals, demands an explanation, and one now appears forthcoming. All vaccines given over a short period of time to an immature immune system deplete the thymus gland. Your thymus gland is the primary gland involved in immune reactions of irreplaceable immature immune cells. And each of these cells could have multiplied and developed into an army of valuable cells to combat infection and growth of abnormal cells. Well, when these immune cells have been raised up and then used up, permanent immunity may not appear. The Arthur Research Foundation in Tucson, Arizona estimates that up to 60% of our immune system may be exhausted by multiple mass vaccines. 36 vaccines are now required for children of school age. Only 10% of immune cells are permanently lost when a child is permitted to develop natural immunity from disease. There needs to be grave concern about these immune system injuring vaccinations. Could the persons who approve these mass vaccinations know that they are impairing the health of these children, many of whom are being doomed to requiring such medical care in the future? Well, let's answer the question, Could public officials know that these vaccines cause permanent injury? Listen to the 10th protocol of the Learned Elders of Zion. Protocol number 10 says to wear everyone out by dissensions, animosities, feuds, famine, inoculation of diseases, and want until the Gentiles see no other way of escape except an appeal to our money and our power. Unquote. Inoculation of diseases. Protocol number 10, written in the 1880s, for crying out loud. You think maybe they were preparing, getting ready for the New World Order? Well, compelling evidence is available that the development of the immune system after contracting the usual childhood diseases matures and renders it capable to fight infection and malignant cells in the future. The use of multiple vaccines, which prevents natural immunity, promotes the development of allergies and asthma. A New Zealand study disclosed that 23% of vaccinated children developed asthma, as compared to zero in unvaccinated children. Let me repeat that. A New Zealand study disclosed that 23% of vaccinated children developed asthma, as compared to zero in unvaccinated children. Remember, Dr. W.B. Clark, clear back in 1900, reported that he never saw a case of cancer in an unvaccinated person. The use of multiple vaccines, which prevents natural immunity, promotes the development of allergies and asthma. Cancer has and was a very rare illness back in the 1890s. This evidence about immune system injury from vaccination affords a plausible explanation for Clark's finding that only vaccinated individuals got cancer. Some radical adverse change in health occurred in the early 1900s to permit cancer to explode, and vaccination appears to be the reason. Vaccines are an unnatural phenomenon. My guess is that if enough persons said no to immunizations, there would be a striking improvement in the general health of the nation, with nature back in the immunizing business instead of man. Having a child vaccinated should be a choice, not a requirement. Medical and religious exemptions are permitted by most states. I reported this to you the other day, all but two. And in Mississippi and West Virginia, you'll have to get a court order. All right, let's talk about this thing of vaccinations. If vaccination for flu probably is injurious, what about vaccinations for polio and diphtheria and typhoid and measles, mumps, and all these other diseases that we're being vaccinated for? Is there really any evidence? Is there any real hard evidence that vaccination prevents disease? I know if you went to public school like I did, the answer is yes. But did you ever see the evidence, or did you just believe it because that's what you were told? Now, I've been reporting to you that the statistics are in the books. I mean, there are libraries that are filled with books on disease and vaccination and statistics that tell you the answer to the question, tells you the answer to the riddle. In 1974, a book called The Poison Needle came out, analyzing vaccinations from 1850 up through the 1950s for 100 years, and the statistical analysis. Remember, I told you the numbers are available. They're published by your government. It's your tax dollars at work. If you haven't read the statistics and you don't know the answer, well, then you're the proximate cause of your own injury. So get your pen and papers out, boys and girls, and jot down a few of these numbers, and let me show you how this game is being played, and maybe you'll reconsider this thing of vaccination. It's a wild new idea, I know, but The Poison Needle, Chapter 1. The increasing flood of evidence against vaccination and the growing demand for the unsuppressed facts about this touchy subject have literally forced this book into being. As this work has progressed and the extensive research has been carried on to trace down and organize the material for this manuscript, other valuable and long-concealed records that I had not expected have come into my hands as if by some unseen power. It is to be hoped that the information contained herein will help to sweep away the tragic errors that cloud the minds of the people of America as well as our physicians. And it's urgent that the living words of truth or some other force be applied to abolish that deadly weapon, the poison needle, which has been the menacing roadblock standing in the way of progress in the healing arts for all of these years. Vaccination and the false germ theory upon which it is hinged has led mankind far astray and has severed the fragile thread that offered medical theory and practice a hope of becoming a science. Under the sway of our present degenerative medical methods, the health of our people has declined over the past century to the lowest point in our history. The 1955 survey showed that over 90% of our population is below par mentally or physically. And according to life insurance records, army reports, hospital statements, government statistics, and physical examinations for marriage certificates and employment, it has been revealed clearly that there is hardly one normal healthy person in 100. The Cancer Foundation states that one out of every four is marked for cancer in 1950. The figures on heart trouble are even worse than that, and the other killer diseases come in for their toll also. Practically all of the rest of the people have symptoms of less serious diseases, and these symptoms are things like headaches, constipation, weak eyes, dental caries, colds, pain, stomach troubles, and so on. Most, if not all, of these diseases are avoidable and curable, but not under the deceptive medical method of poisoning the well and the sick with vaccines and drugs and mutilating them with unnecessary operations. When socialized medicine was threatening, a meeting of medical officials was called to discuss just how many and which operations would really be necessary if there was no profit in it. And it was decided that only 3% of operations would be considered essential under those conditions. This information came from a medical student whose instructor had attended the meeting. Now, where have the great strides of medical science taken us? Well, after a glance at the medical records covering the past 70 years or so of what is boastfully called our great strides of medical science, we can hardly help wondering if those seven league strides haven't been in reverse because there's been a marked decline in our nation's health and a shocking increase in the serious degenerative killer diseases during these very same 70 years. The acute diseases that were supposed to have been conquered by vaccination have only been masked and then renamed to save face or suppressed until the retained poisons corroded the internal organs and developed into dangerous chronic degenerative diseases. We've traded infectious disease for degenerative disease. And the following table gives us an idea of what our present faulty methods are doing to our nation and to our people. Now, the increase in killer disease statistics during the past 70 years. Insanity has increased 400%. Cancer has increased 308%. Anemia is increased 300%. Epilepsy increased 397%. Bright's disease increased 65%. Heart disease increased 179%. Diabetes increased 1800%. And polio has increased 680%. Never in the history of this country have preventable diseases flourished with such wild abandon, continuously being fed by the very drugs and commercialized irritants that set them into operation in the first place. Dr. Alexis Carrel of the Rockefeller Institute stated in the Scientific Monthly, in July of 1925. Now listen to this. Clear back in 1925, here's what we knew. He said, although the adult individual today has much less chance of dying from smallpox, cholera, or typhoid than he had 50 years ago, he surely has more prospect of being tortured by some new form of cancer, afflicted with slow diseases of the kidneys, or of his circulatory apparatus, or of the endocrine glands, and of going insane. Modern medicine protects him, or at least attempts to, against infections which kill rapidly, but they leave him exposed to the slower and more cruel and painful degenerative diseases, unquote. Now, Annie Riley Hale in the medical voodoo speaks of medicine as a system of healing which, after 5,000 years of trial and error, is describing itself as a science in the making, whose proudest showing to date is that it has enabled the race to swap smallpox for cancer and typhoid fever for diabetes and insanity, and it may still be worthy of credence and patronage by its devoted followers. But what justification can there be for putting the whole power of the government in back of such a system and the public treasury to be put at its disposal, to spread this misleading propaganda about its own peculiar doctrines and methods, to force them on all of the rest of us? Although there are a number of far more successful and efficient systems of healing in this country, the allopathic medical system is the only one that gets endorsement and support from our government. All of our tax-supported departments of health, hospitals, and institutions are under the domination of allopathic medical personnel. In spite of the financial support, public confidence, and full-scale experimentation and testing of all of the allopathic medical methods and theories, the Medical School of Healing has totally failed to control any of the killer diseases and doesn't have a sure cure for even one of the mild diseases. Smallpox and other epidemics were largely controlled by improvements in sanitation and nutrition years before vaccination became popularized. And yet a tremendous sum of money is poured every year into the medical coffers every year with no accounting ever made for its use and no benefits have ever been received. Now, isn't it time that the squandering of public funds be stopped and the better qualified practitioners be given a chance to salvage the wreckage? After half a century of medical practice, Dr. John Tilden made the following observation. He said, regarding the inadequate medical procedures, that the ability to cure has not kept pace with diagnosis. Today, we behold the scientific paradox of skilled physicians sometimes knowing exactly what disease that the patient is suffering with. But then, he's totally unable to cure the disease. The ability to diagnose disease, coupled with the impotence in curing that disease, is the true status of scientific allopathic medicine today. Clinicians are floundering about in a sea of speculation and uncertainty concerning cause and cure. And the best of them declare that autopsies prove that almost half of their diagnoses are wrong. Dr. Charles Mayo, in a radio broadcast, stated that at their clinic, the Mayo Clinic, the prestigious Mayo Clinic,
Autopsies show that they only get 20% of the diagnoses correct. 20% at the Mayo Clinic. Every part of the body is represented by a specialist. The irony of all of this professional perfection is summed up in a very few words. Namely, diagnosis is an elaborate system of summing up effects without one scintilla of knowledge of cause. There is no knowledge as to what the cause or the treatment is. And cause and treatment is a stupendous scheme of palliation with braggadocio concerning immunization. But the question will not go down. How is a disease to be prevented or cured when the cause is unknown? All 400 plus so-called diseases are nothing more than expressions of our general systematic derangement, states which I am pleased to name toxemia or healing crises. Toxemia is a state of body poisoning, self-generated or induced by vaccine, serums, drugs, or other poisons. Philosophy of Health, Dr. Tilden. Well, R.T. Troll, M.D., was another doctor who gave the medical method a long and thorough trial before abandoning it as a total failure. He turned to nature in its simplicity and upon its sound basic laws of healing. He brought about miracles of recovery from all diseases. After trying to justify the inconsistencies of medical theory, here's what he had to say. He said, quote, "Why has not success in treating disease kept pace with the extraordinary progress of knowledge of other sciences?" Well, the answer is very ready. A successful practice of the healing art must be based upon the laws of science, the laws of life, the economy of vitality. The only foundation, therefore, of true healing is correct physiological principles. And here is precisely where the whole orthodox medical system of the present day fails. Utterly and totally fails. It has no physiological and it has no biological science upon which to truly practice the healing art. Unquote. Dr. R.T. Troll, M.D. Now, these are strong words coming from medical doctors who know the system thoroughly. Medicine is a paying game, financially speaking, and for successful practitioners to leave it for the sake of honesty, integrity, and idealism indicates that these cherished qualities are lacking in that branch of the business. It is this lack of correct physiological and biological principles that has enabled the medical profession to foist off on us such an unscientific delusion as a vaccination on all of us and the public at large. Now, vaccination is based upon a false premise. It's the false germ theory of disease upon which vaccination has been based that has been the blind leader of the blind, that has dragged the medical system and the impressionable public deeper into the morass of confusion and disease. The germ theory is discussed at length in the chapter titled On Friendly Terms with Germs in Book 2. However, our present concern in this chapter is merely to point out that the instability of the nebulous theory of antibodies, which is the main prop that holds up the theory of the dead corpse of vaccination. In Volume 6 of The Hygienic System, Dr. Herbert M. Shelton brings into sharper focus this tricky subject of antibodies. Antibodies, these elusive little nothings, have fooled the people and served the uses of the doctors, but have vanished into theory when subjected to the clear light of scientific investigation. And Dr. Shelton writes, quote, "The whole of the modern medical practice of vaccine, serum, and antitoxin therapy is based upon the supposition, the theory, that the body manufactures substances called antitoxins, antibodies, antigens, which are capable of meeting and destroying toxins that get into your body. This idea seems to be sound, although it is possible that the work of destroying such toxins is that of the detoxification carried on by the liver and the lymph glands. Antitoxins, antibodies, antigens have never been isolated. They've only been assumed. They've been believed in, while the practice based upon their assumed existence has been both a failure and a disaster. However, this may not be due to their non-existence. If they exist, it is possible to separate them from the proteins of the animal's blood in making vaccines, and these proteins, when injected directly into the blood of another animal or human being, are very poisonous. Besides this, there is no evidence that the antitoxins of one species can be made use of by any other species. And where vaccines are employed, it constitutes the introduction of actual disease matter into the blood. That is, the supposed causative germs or some product of the disease is introduced into your body. The consequences are often terrible. Real benefits are never observed. If this hypothesis that the body manufactures antitoxins, antibodies, antigens, etc., is correct, it still remains to be proven that the body ever manufactures these greatly in excess of the need for them. And it cannot be shown that free antitoxin antibodies, antigens, are suspended in the blood serum and can therefore be transferred to another animal in sufficient quantities to be of use to the receiving animal. In keeping with a general law of life, it is very probable that the body does manufacture an excess of antibodies, but it cannot be shown that it retains these after the need for them has expired. On the contrary, in keeping with another general law of life, it is very probable that the body begins to get rid of them the very instant the need for them ceases. If they exist, they are chemical substances produced to meet an emergency and will be cast out as soon as the emergency ceases to exist. Now, the renowned Dr. Anton Bekamp, one of the world's foremost scientists and bacteriologists, observed that the microorganisms that are ordinarily called germs evolve out of decaying cells that they help to build and take part in the decomposition of the ever-changing life substance and help it form it into material usable again by nature to rebuild cells. Thus, when germs are found within a sick body, it is not that they entered from outside and caused you to get sick. The germs are there because they developed from the decaying cells within the body and have an important part to play in helping to handle the waste and destruction brought about by serums, drugs, and other poisons forced upon your body from outside. Perhaps our modern bacteriologists have seen this activity of the microzymas and jumped to the conclusion that they are antibodies fighting disease and that they, the doctors, must inject more of them into your body by way of vaccines. But anyone with common sense can see that this would only interfere with and disrupt the well-organized efforts of nature. This is the reason why vaccination has taken such a heavy toll of lives and has produced such widespread disease. Nature makes no mistakes and violates no laws. Nature is uniformly governed by fixed principles, and all of her actions harmonize with the laws that govern these actions. The Hygienic System, page 48, by Dr. Sheldon. Using the term she rather than God, and nature in place of God, tells us very plainly that what we're dealing with here is evolutionary philosophy. Evolutionary philosophy. Remember that in the Bible we have certain specific laws. You shall not eat blood. Today we take blood and make serums out of it and mainline the stuff and then wonder why it is that we get sick, why it is that disease increases. We do a study and we find that unvaccinated children have zero asthma. Vaccinated children, at least 23% of them, develop asthma. Doesn't our common sense tell us that vaccinations, if they cause 23% of the people who receive them to get asthma, could it be that other percentages get such things as sudden infant death syndrome or some other side effect? I mean, come on, boys and girls, let's wake up and smell the coffee. Now, let me tell you a little story. Let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, that you and I are a couple of ranchers, and we go out riding our horses one day, and we come up to a water hole, and we see around the water hole two dead cows. And I say to you, my God, look at two dead cows. And on the two dead cows, we see some wolves eating their carcass. Now, that's pretty obvious. If you saw a couple of dead cows down there and a pack of wolves eating on them, you'd say to yourself, well, my God, those wolves must have killed those cows, and they're eating them, wouldn't you? So you and I go to the legislature, and we appeal to our lawmakers, and we say, you know, these wolves out here are causing great losses. And every time they kill a cow, it's a loss to us, and it's a loss to the government because you're not getting taxes. The legislature see the wisdom of our argument, and they pass a law requiring the extermination of the wolves. The government hires hunters, they go out, they kill all the wolves in Idaho. There's not a single wolf left. And that solves our problem, doesn't it? You kill the wolves can't kill the cows. All right, so now we've solved the wolf problem, killing our cows. But one day, you and I are riding out again, and we come alongside the water hole, and we see another dead cow. And this time, there's a bunch of coyotes eating on the cow. And we say, well, darn, we no sooner get rid of the wolves, and the darn coyotes come in and kill our cows. So we go back to the legislature, and of course, the legislature wants to get more and more taxes. They don't want us to have our cows being killed and eaten by coyotes. That deprives the government of its revenue. So they hire the hunters to go out and exterminate and eradicate the coyotes. After all, we want to preserve, we want to protect our livestock. So now all the coyotes are killed. Well, now the wolves and the coyotes can't kill our cows, can they? So one day, you and I are riding again. We go down by the water hole, and sure enough, look at that, another dead cow. This time, this dead cow is covered with buzzards. And immediately we come to the conclusion, well, my God, if those buzzards are eating that cow, then it must be that the buzzards killed the cow, and therefore we need to go back to the legislature to have new legislation enacted to eradicate buzzards. And we do. And we go to the legislature, and the legislature hires the hunters, and the hunters go out and they kill all the buzzards. Now we've gotten rid of the wolves, got rid of the coyotes, got rid of the buzzards. Well, one thing's certain, the wolves, coyotes, and buzzards won't be killing our cows. So we go out riding again. We go by the water hole, and there's a dead cow. There's no wolves, there's no buzzards, there's no coyotes. But upon closer examination, we find that the carcass is covered with maggots and flies. It's pretty obvious to us that the flies have attacked the cows, killed them, laid their eggs, and the maggots are consuming it. We go back to the legislature and we say, my God, we have an infestation of flies and maggots that are killing our cows. And what we need are more fly swatters in the hands of more hunters to kill every fly in the state of Idaho. And the legislature enacts the legislation and we kill all the flies. And then one day you and I are riding down by the waterhole again and we observe a dead cow. There are no wolves, there are no coyotes, there are no buzzards, and there are no flies. But we observe that the carcass is being consumed by something. And upon closer inspection, we call out the veterinarian and he says, this body is being consumed by bacteria. So we come to the conclusion, my God, the bacteria, the germs must be killing our cows. Therefore, we must vaccinate and inoculate all of our cattle. And we do to this day. Now, boys and girls, we've killed off all of the predators. But you know, a dead body will still be consumed by the bacteria that's in it. And that's because the bacteria, like the buzzards, the coyotes, and the wolves, were created by God for the express purpose of disposing of dead bodies. Shouldn't we go a little deeper into the question of why did the cow die, rather than assume that the predators who are consuming the dead body have killed it? And sure enough, upon an analysis of the water, we find that it's alkaline. The cows are drinking the water. The poisoned water kills the cow. And the wolf, the coyote, the buzzard, the fly, and the bacteria were designed by God to clean up the landscape. Bacteria are like wolves and coyotes. They're designed. They're there for a purpose. They dispose of dead bodies. Now, vaccination lowers resistance and it invites disease. Dr. J.W. Hodge had considerable experience with vaccination before he denounced it and wrote a book on his collected data in his book called The Vaccination Superstition. Dr. Hodge, on page 41, tells us this. Quote, after a thorough investigation of the most authentic records and facts in harmony with the physician's daily observations and experiences, the conclusion is drawn that instead of protecting its subjects from contagion of smallpox, vaccination actually renders them more susceptible to smallpox. Vaccination is the implantation of disease. That is its admitted purpose. Health is the ideal state to be sought, not disease. Every pathogenic disturbance in the infected organism wastes and lowers the vital power and thus diminishes its natural resisting capacity. This fact is well known and so universally conceded that it seems superfluous to cite authorities. Nevertheless, let me mention at least one. The International Textbook of Surgery, Volume 1, page 263, is authority for the following statement. Quote, persons weakened by disease or worn out by excessive labor yield more readily to infection than do healthy individuals. Unquote. Now, if that's true, it explains why in various epidemics, smallpox always attacks the vaccinated first. And why these diseases continue to infest the civilized world while its allied unvaccinated filth diseases have disappeared before the advance of civilization through the good offices of sanitation, hygiene, and improved nutrition. Let me take you back to the Bible. Did you know that God requires you to be clean? Many of the 18 health laws are aimed at sanitation. For instance, there's a statute that requires you to carry a paddle on your side and bury your excrement. Human excrement is very toxic. We find in many third world countries where sanitation through sewage disposal is lacking, those people suffer from cholera, typhoid, and malaria, and various other infectious diseases. When we clean up the society, the diseases go away. There's another law that deals with health in the Bible. It tells us that we have to eat certain foods. You have to have certain foods. And there are some foods that are toxic, and there are some foods that you ought not to eat. Milk and butter are two of the foods for you to eat, and pig and shellfish are a couple of foods that you're not to eat. And by mixing and matching, you toxify your body and you develop a disease. You develop a disease. I'm ill at ease. I feel real bad. White sugar does that. You consume white sugar. Your body can only handle 3 teaspoons a day and dispose of it. So you drink soda pop and you get 9 to 12 teaspoons a day. What does your body do with it? Stores it until there's no more room. Then we get a cold. The cold is simply the body's mechanism for disposing of toxic waste in your body. And then you become diseased, ill at ease. You feel bad. You don't feel good. You're sneezing and coughing and wheezing and whining. And you know, the solution to the problem is stop poisoning yourself, and that won't happen. We don't want to do that. We want a vaccine that'll cure the common cold. How the hell can you get a vaccine to cure the common cold when the common cold is your body's response to toxins and poisons in your body? Hey, come on, kids. We can do better than that. Surely we're not that dumb. Now, summarizing the case against vaccination, Dr. Hodge continues, after a careful consideration of the history of vaccination gleaned from an impartial and comprehensive study of vital statistics and pertinent data from every reliable source, and after an experience derived from having vaccinated more than 3,000 people, I am firmly convinced that vaccination cannot be shown to have any logical relation to the diminution of cases of smallpox, and furthermore, that the practice of vaccination has been the means of disseminating some of the most fatal and loathsome diseases, such as leprosy, paralysis, cancer, syphilis, tetanus, and tuberculosis. And that vaccination is not only useless, but positively injurious. Instead of protecting its subjects from contagion of smallpox, it actually renders them more susceptible to smallpox by depressing the vital power of the immune system and diminishing the natural resistance of the body. And three, that immunity from all diseases is to be realized through the attainment of health, not by the propagation of disease. Four, that it is never necessary to set up one disease in a healthy organism to protect against another, and that such procedure is an appalling violation of the basic principles of hygiene and sanitary science. And that five, the performance of the vaccine operation in the very nature of the case violates the cardinal precepts of modern aseptic surgery, the aim of which is to exclude the products of disease from the organism and never to introduce them into it. And six, that there is no evidence worthy of the name on record to prove that vaccination either prevents or mitigates smallpox. Seven, that many healthy children have died from the effects of vaccination. Eight, that millions of vaccinated people have died of confluent smallpox while having the plainest vaccine scars on their bodies. Nine, that smallpox epidemics invariably attack the vaccinated first. 10. That smallpox follows closely upon flagrant violation of the laws of health, hygiene, and sanitation. 11. That the occurrence of all of the great epidemics of smallpox have coincided with periods of sanitary neglect. 12. That cowpox and venereal pox have much in common. 13. That the analogy between the manifestations of vaccine and those of syphilis is so close that several of the most eminent pathologists of the world regard cowpox as nothing more than a modified form of syphilis. 14. That the so-called spontaneous cowpox is a myth. That cowpox is a disorder not natural to the cow. That it never occurs in bulls or steers, nor in young heifers that have never been milked. That it is a disease of milk cows, which has been communicated to them from sores on the hands of milkers who were suffering from syphilis. 15. That the serious killer diseases such as cancer, syphilis, heart trouble, polio, tuberculosis, etc., will never be eliminated as long as blood pollution through vaccination is continued. 16. That the community that has sanitary surroundings, a pure water supply, wholesome food, good health, and freedom from the blood poisoning effects of vaccination need have no fear of smallpox or any other disease. 17. That no man can be truly said to be susceptible to the contagion of smallpox or to that of any other disease so long as he is in a state of perfect health. 18. That such a state of health resists and repels the assaults of all morbific influences and is therefore the best protective against disease. 19. The vaccination has utterly and totally failed to fulfill the promises made for it by Jenner and his followers, and that he saddled a legacy of disease and death upon our race for which he was paid $150,000 by the British government. 20. That compulsory vaccination ranks with human slavery and religious persecution as one of the most flagrant outrages upon the rights of human beings. 21. That Switzerland, England, Australia, and other enlightened countries abolished compulsory vaccination after it was tested and proved to be disastrous. But laws sanctioning this crime still degrade the statute books of America. And 22. That reforms are not made by those who profit by them, so the doctors or the government cannot be depended upon to abolish vaccination of their own volition. And that the people themselves must rise up and make demands for freedom from this curse of greed, ignorance, and destruction. For only then can we hope to see the light of day of health, progress, and harmonious adjustment. Well, let me tell you a little story here. We're talking about smallpox. Excuse me, we're talking about flu rather than smallpox. I'll get to smallpox here probably next time. But what's wrong with the flu shot? You know, everybody is out here trying to get a flu shot today and blaming the government because there's a shortage of the vaccine. I'm not complaining about a shortage of vaccine. Well, I wouldn't take that flu shot unless you knocked me to the ground with about five guys holding me down and stuck me with a needle. I'd be fighting and screaming and kicking all the way. I don't want the vaccination. People are running around now paying up to $100 to get that flu vaccine. They're buying it like heroin and cocaine in back alleys. Yeah, this flu virus, this flu vaccine. It's in short supply and people want it. They're just desperate for it. Now remember, people are motivated by vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. Fear. The fear of flu. The fear of this disease. The fear of dying from the flu. Flu, it is reported, kills 40,000 people a year. I don't know if that's true or not. I kind of doubt it, but that's what they're telling us. Well, Dr. Richard Schultz, he is a naturopath. You know, one of these crazy docs, you know, one of these alternative medicos, a reactionary, a radical, right-wing, nut, you know, kook, screwball. Well, he weighs in on this thing of flu, and he doesn't believe in vaccinations and flu shots. He believes in clean living, diet, herbs. I guess he kind of believes in those 32 herbs that you see in the Bible, and so he uses those to cure people's diseases. I know it's crazy, but listen to what he has to say about what's wrong with the flu shot. And he says everything is wrong with the flu shot. He said first experts say it doesn't work. There's no evidence that any influenza vaccine thus far developed is effective in preventing or mitigating any attack of influenza. The producers of these vaccines know that they're worthless, but they go on selling them anyway. That comes from Dr. J. Anthony Morris, the former chief vaccine control officer at the Food and Drug Administration. Did you hear that? Let me repeat it. Here's an expert. His name is Dr. J. Anthony Morris. He's the former chief vaccine control officer at the FDA. And he said, quote, there's no evidence that any influenza vaccine thus far developed is effective in preventing or mitigating any attack of influenza. The producers of these vaccines know that they're worthless. They go on selling them anyway. So let's look at the facts. The flu shot has never been proven to be effective. And many experts worldwide now agree that it has never worked and that the rise and fall of all disease, especially influenza, is based on our immune system's antibody response and self-educated process and not because of medical meddling. Now, the main reason that many experts believe influenza vaccines don't work is because of a natural scientific phenomenon called antigenic shift and drift. Darwin may not have been right with his theory of evolution, and my great-great-grandmother may not have been a chimp, but his theory proves very valid when it comes to viruses. Viruses do evolve and change, and they change from one form to another. So every year, actually, every few weeks, the old virus has become a very new virus. Even the federal government Center for Disease Control tells us that influenza, the flu, and flu seasons are unpredictable. Although epidemics of flu happen in most years, the beginning severity and length of the epidemic can vary widely from year to year before a season begins. It's not possible to accurately predict the features of any flu season. The simple reason that it's impossible to predict the coming influenza season's viruses is because it's impossible to predict the future. Even if you got lucky and guessed it correctly, the next influenza virus is never just one virus. All influenza viruses are a blend of many different strains and many different types of virus. So the odds of you finding one particular grain of sand in all of the beaches in California are far better than any medical doctor guessing next year's viral cocktail. So next year's, even next week's virus will be totally new. It'll be different, mutated, a blend of multiple influenza viruses. And remember, even that new blend of virus is constantly in a state of flux. So here it is again, antigenic shift and drift. So every year, pharmaceutical companies make the flu vaccine based on last year's influenza. Let me pause here for a minute. Flu changes. The virus is constantly changing, and there's more than one virus. This year's flu vaccine is made from and predicated upon last year's flu viruses. Not this year's, it's last year's. And it changes every year. They've been watching this, you know, for years. That's why they call it a different name every year. They call it the Hong Kong flu, or the swine flu, or the chicken croup flu, or the flu over the cuckoo's nest flu. You know, there's a different name every year on the virus because it's a different cocktail. Now let's use our heads, boys and girls. How in the hell is this year's flu vaccine going to protect you from this year's flu, which is different from last year's? And the flu vaccine is predicated upon last year's flu, which, by the way, nobody's ever proven that it could prevent it anyway. Man, come on, guys. We're buying a product that we know scientifically has absolutely no merit. Why then are we buying it? Fear. Fear. We're buying it. Our motivation is we're afraid of getting the flu. Now, let me tell you a little story here. Flu is a kissing cousin of a cold. And they tell you plainly that flu and colds are incurable. There's no shot. There's no medication for viruses, boys and girls. None. Zero. Zilch. You go to the doctor. And the doctor says, well, you got a cold. Caused by what? Virus. Virus. Huh. Here comes that wolf, coyote, and buzzard. Viruses were created by God to destroy diseased tissue. Now, that's what a wolf is for. That's what a coyote is for. That's what a buzzard is for. And they're carrion eaters. That's what viruses are for. That's what bacteria are for. They're to eat up. They're to consume. They're to dispose of dead cells. They're carrion eaters. When you see a dead cow covered with coyotes, it isn't the coyotes that killed the cow. The coyotes are there as a result of the dead cow. Result of the dead cow. They're carrion eaters. Buzzards don't kill cows. It is true that wolves will kill animals once in a while. They kill the weak ones. They don't kill the strong ones. They kill the weak ones. So when your body gets weak, the viruses and bacteria attack it. Then your body dies. It's true. But giving it a vaccine isn't the solution. It's building the immune system. If you got a strong caribou, the wolves don't bother. The wolves circle around and catch the one that's crippled. They catch the old one, the slow one, not the healthy, vibrant one. They're constantly culling the herd. That's what disease, that's what bacteria and viruses do. They cull the herd. Now listen, try this. Stop eating refined sugar for 90 days. Just take it right out of your diet. I know that 99% of you can't do that, but the 1% of you that can, just test this and I'll show you how this works. Because I used to have colds and flus just like you and everybody else. I haven't had a cold or a flu in 20 years. And I'll never have another. Well, unless I eat too much refined sugar. Now, I'm not saying that you can't have a Snickers bar once in a while or a Krispy Kreme donut. I like a candy bar, and I like a Krispy Kreme donut. But here's what happens to us. They taste good. We like them. And we overindulge and we eat too many of them. And when you do that, your body becomes toxic, and your body has to get rid of it. And so you come down with a cold. So that snot running out of your nose and running down the back of your throat is simply the accumulation of toxic waste, white refined sugar that your body has to get rid of because you build up too much of it too fast. Your body can dispose of white sugar. Your body can dispose of the toxins that you put into it until you put them in so fast and so furious it can't handle them. That's all. So take white sugar out of your diet for 90 days, and you're going to find out that the average 3.5 colds that the average American has every year will disappear. Yeah, I'm running out of time. I got to cut it off right there. We'll take it up here again when we come back tomorrow night. Hey, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by pre-arrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. All of these Law Hour programs are brought to you in the public interest. All right, I'm out of time. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. So until then, good night, friends.